how do I network? I go, why do you feel your network isn't working for you? And they go, oh, because I, you know, I'm not getting the jobs I want. I'm getting the roles I want. I'm not, you know, being seen by the people I want. And I go, okay, so you've identified three things there of how you can improve your networking. You want to connect with people. You want to connect with bigger jobs, and you want to push your career.
Welcome to Filmmaking Framed, the video podcast that interviews industry professionals to find out the tips and tricks to make it behind the silver screen. With me, as always, is my co-host,
Tom Dexter,
and myself, Daniel Hughes.
With us today is professional actor Christian Reed, who's also the co-artistic director of Fleur-de-Lis Theatre Company, and has recently launched a professional advice service called Coaching with Chris.
Yeah.
Welcome, Christian.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate you having me on.
Yeah,
no, it's awesome. I'm loving the setup and vibes, like everything. This is really, really cool. Thank you for having me.
So we usually start one of these episodes by asking our guests to define their role.
Oh, good.
I feel like many people listening probably feel like they know what an actor is.
Sure.
But in your words, what is the role of an actor, you know, in the general industry ecosystem?
Short answer, I'm a professional pretender. No, I mean, I'm very on brand stuff. So like I categorize myself as an actor combatant specialist, and I'm an aspiring motion and performance capture artist. So what I specifically do is, first and foremost, I'm an actor. You know, I text based work and all that kind of stuff. But I do varieties of sword fighting, firearms, unarmed fights, those kinds of things. And just kind of, you know, reach into every area of the industry that's possible. So theater, film, you know, motion capture, it's all that kind of stuff. So it's a lot of fun. It really is. I mean, all joking aside, it is professionally pretending to just be other people, the other stuff, and pure creativity. It's the best job ever.
And Christian is being very humble when he says an aspiring motion capture performer, because he is on a yet to be announced video game where he has performed in performance captures.
I have, but I feel like if I said to them, I was like, oh yeah, I'm a motion performance and voiceover artist, I was like, can you call that if it's not out yet? Can you? You know, I'm still under an NDA. Like,
yeah. You're waiting till release day, and then you're just going to click the button. Yes, professional.
Yeah, professional. Here we go. I can have this one. Yeah, but it's like, I was like, I mean, it's first credit. So, you know, there's people who've done amazing work with motion performance capture. And I don't know, there's a part of me that feels like I'd be cheapening that to say that I am that when I've done one job. Don't get me wrong, great job, loved it, did so many sessions in Centroid, but yeah, it does feel like I'm still aspiring. I think give me another credit, give me another opportunity to get into it, and then maybe I'll feel comfortable going, yeah, I'm a mocap and performance capture artist. But for now, we'll say aspiring.
Your intro there, you clearly have developed over time a lot of different skills.
Yeah.
So that whatever role comes up, you're ready to tackle it.
Yeah.
We want to kind of take you right back to young Christian. What point did you decide you wanted to be an actor, and how did you begin developing those skills, and what path did you go down?
Yeah, I mean, growing up, I had an incredibly creative household. Like, we were always doing your family stuff, your family plays, your family performances. You know, you had Christmas and you'd go around your grandparents and we'd have a little performance for you guys, that kind of thing. So performing always had some kind of place in my life, in my family. So it kind of came into it. I actually went down a more aggressive route, I think is the best way to put it. I was trying to be a professional kickboxer, and I was training up in West Yorkshire. I did a variety of martial arts as I was growing up, just to try and like expand and get into professional acting. I started doing tournaments and these kind of things. And it wasn't actually until I took an injury and then subsequently decided to not listen to my doctor and tried to rush my recovery and caused a second injury in the same knee, you know, the conversations started happening of, is this what you want to do? Is this really where you want to go? So it became kind of like, okay, if I can't do this, what else do I enjoy? And a part of fighting that I enjoyed was I enjoyed the performance element of it. I enjoyed the audience aspect of it. You know, there was that kind of, you know, you mean a boxing ring, open mat. It's the same as a stage. It creates a space for entertainment. And I thought to myself, you know what? Let's try that route. Let's see what happens. I toyed with the idea of other things, and nothing really kind of came to me as like, oh, you know, that gives me that kind of fire to like get on with it, like fighting did. And hilariously, it was actually when I started seeking out like training, because I decided to go down the drama school route. It wasn't until I started doing training that my mum found a course that was a combination of stage combat and acting. And initially, guys, I resisted. Like, the way I was like, no, I don't want to be a stunt performer. No, I want to do acting. Ah. I mean, bless my mom. Like, she was like, no, this is going to be good for you. This is something you want. This is something you should do. I went to an open day. I fell in love. I was like, wow, this combines two great loves, fighting and performance. And I went there and I carried on, did training, and just haven't looked back since. I've been working full-time in the industry ever since I left training. So it's been a real, you know, which is a real blessing to say. That just carried me straight on to where I am right now, you know.
That's amazing.
Thanks.
and do your parents, what do they do for a living? Are they in the creative industries or?
They're not, no. So my dad was a HR consultant. I think he's where I got my more business mind. He was, you know, he was really funny about, like, you know, he would talk to me about like just like law and logistics and how, you know, so definitely stuff like he shouldn't have been telling me about. You know, he was telling me like, oh yeah, this person did this, and I tell you what, if this ever happens to you, this is the best way to get out of it, kind of thing. So you get a lot of business jargon and understanding from my dad. And my mum, she's a she was a teaching assistant. She's gone into more of like a freelance teaching assistant role now, so she dips in and out, but she's wonderfully creative, like not in terms of acting performance stuff, but she makes things. She's fantastic at like arts and crafts style things. So this is what I'm saying, like, I always had like a really creative upbringing in that way, because my mum's influence was amazing in that regard. Sister's a phenomenal singer. Brother's incredibly creative with music and all that kind of stuff. He's really intelligent. He's a writer now. You know, he's published a children's book, Brock the Sock, and it's you know, it's beautiful. He's working on some other stuff, so it's really, really cool having those kind of influences pushing in that. But in terms of myself, like, I started down that acting route, and then ambitions took me in, you know, every area, because, you know, you can't be a one trick horse, can you? You just gotta reach into every area that's of interest to you. Yeah.
I mean, well, I guess well-rounded actors. I remember hearing stories of actors claiming they can ride horses. You know that one?
Yeah. Can I name actors on this? Is that right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Was it the Eddie Redmayne?
I'm sure it's happened many, many times.
I can, just specifically with Eddie Redmayne, I can say that he can mount a horse without a saddle, without anything, and walking at a horse. So whoever the actor is.
Right.
Because I've worked on an Eddie Redmayne project last year, and the director was so proud of, they showed me a clip they'd done in Budapest where Eddie Redmayne just walks up to a horse, like head on, and just like one hand jumps on the saddle.
It's not Eddie.
No, it's a different person. I apologize, Eddie. I was not trying to besmirch.
He's the only actor I've ever seen a clip of trying to get on a horse.
I can't remember who it was, but there was some story about an actor who like said they could ride a horse, got on it, you know, take off on a gallop, and you know,
couldn't.
Screaming their head off, and the director comes up and goes, you lying, and again, swearing.
Yes, sure.
You lying bastard. I was like, oh, cool.
It's also driving. That's one, I think, sometimes that... I mean, basically, for the audience's sake, the way a lot of actors in the UK, they're on a service called Spotlight, and on Spotlight, it lists things like your height, your age, your like playing age, and all your different skill sets and your CV, basically, of what you've done. And it lists the CV. So from in my role as a performance capture producer, I'll hire people who say they can do motion capture.
Yeah.
But I don't actually know who regulates what people say they can do. I know stunts is a different thing. It's a stunt register, but generally speaking, how does Spotlight work?
I mean, Spotlight, obviously when you're lucky enough to get on Spotlight and qualify for it, you're in control. You as an actor are in control of putting in what skills you have and what skills you can state that you are highly skilled in. Obviously, if you have representation, ideally your agent should also be checking that, making sure that you're not lying about anything, because, like, you know, they're always going to find out, you know. It's one of those famous stories I like to tell clients of mine. Is I was like, one of my previous representations, I was auditioning just for their agency, and the first thing this agent said to me was like, "Cool, so you've said you can say this accent, do it now." I was like, "Excuse me?" He's like, "Yeah, you said that you can do this accent, do it now." Okay, and you know, having that get in phrase to get in, and you know, she went through, and I mean, she went my CV. She had me doing like a stage combat fall. She had me like screw up a piece of paper and create a puppet and all these kinds of things just to show these different skills that I'd listed on Spotlight as saying I could do them and all this kind of thing. And it wasn't until afterwards when she was in that kind of more conversational mode that she went, "The reason I asked you that is because so many actors put skills on their CVs. And realistically, if you're going to list something on your CV, then today, right now, if I gave you the opportunity to demonstrate it, you should be able to demonstrate it."
Yeah.
So it's not regulated by anyone else other than you. But I do think if you do have representation, an agent, I mean, depending on the scale and size of agency, but ideal situation, an agent would have idea of whether or not you're kind of fibbing or telling the truth or not.
I suppose you could say that you play the guitar and you did when you were 15 and you haven't played for 10 years.
Yeah.
You can't just go pick up a guitar for a job.
No, yes. Yeah. This is the danger as well with, like, obviously, like, your marketing materials with all stuff like showreels, different. Obviously, that impacts more in, like, has your look changed? Has your age changed? Obviously, how you look in your showreel. But then when you look at, like, physical skills reels and combat reels, you know, someone put out a combat reel and be like, "Oh, yeah, here's me fighting with, hand and a half broadsword." And the last time they handled a hand and a half broadsword was 6 years ago. And it's like, you can't, like, come on, guys. Can you really do that? No, now. Like, right, if I gave you a sword right now, could you do that? And it is interesting how many people will go, "Yeah, absolutely." And no, they can't, you know. But to round about that, yeah, it's all actors. Like, actors control what goes on their Spotlight, what goes on their CVs, and whether or not they list it as highly skilled or not.
You know? That feels like it really highlights you have to manage it and you have to resist that urge to make yourself look better, because no one will stop you, but the industry will find out about it and punish you in ways that you don't see.
Oh, 100%. There's always that phrase of kind of like, you know, try until they find out you can't try anymore, you know? And it's that kind of thing of like, I always advise against it. I'm like, look, if you can do something, wonderful. Keep training it, keep practicing it, because it's clearly something that's going to be in demand for you at some point. But now if you lie on your CV, I mean, as with any other, job, you'll be found out eventually, you know. And don't get me wrong, sometimes it's overlooked. Sometimes you go, "Oh, damn, I haven't practiced that voice in a while. Oh, I haven't done that move, you know, that trick in a while." And you're a bit rusty, but you should be ideally within like a week be able to go, "Okay, yeah, I got that back and I'm fine," you know, before this job, which requires me to do it every single day, you know, calls me in kind of thing. But it is crazy though. No, 100%. If you're going to list something on your CV, you got to be able to either drop it right there and then, or be able to do it within a day or two, like, of practice to have it back, you know?
Yeah. What would you say, I guess, across your, both your commercial and theatre and various performances, what sort of skills, if you were a budding actor, what sort of skills are really employable to have?
I suppose it depends on what medium you're interested in, because, like, you know, different goals, different aspirations. I mean, the ones that I've found, generally speaking for myself, that are highly employable is, you know, stage combat for certain. Like it's applicable across theater, film, video games. You know, it's got reach everywhere. So it's a very in-demand skill, and you know, there's very little opportunity to do a lot of it because of cost, and unless you go into training, obviously that's putting time away, and sometimes that's just as costly as your finances. But that's definitely a huge skill. Puppetry, you know, doing multi-puppeteer puppetry, massively popular skill. You know, Life of Pi, War Horses coming back. You know, there's a lot of interesting things with puppetry that people are really, really seeking out. Languages, big one. Languages, like if you can speak multiple languages, crazy. Crazy how in demand that is. Actor musicians, music, you know, that's a big thing. You know, it differs depending on the goal, and it differs depending on the field in which you have aspirations in. So
can you speak a bit more about that?
Which
in regard to, you say the skills differ slightly based on the field.
Sure.
So can you talk a little bit about which skills tend to go towards which fields?
So generally speaking, I would argue that puppetry, whilst it does have a place in, for sure, in, you know, TV, film works, you know, Dark Crystal being a prime example of a recent one that's come into my mind, it's predominantly a skill that appears in live performance. You know, it's predominantly a skill that is required for people aspiring for long haul Broadway, West End touring, but it's also, you know, it's also in international touring quite a lot. You know, it's a very unique art form that is applicable and really digestible to a lot of audiences. You know, simplifying something down into a puppet, but that puppet being incredibly intrinsic and interesting. It's a really beautiful, interesting art form is puppetry. But I do find that generally leans you towards more of a theatre route than I would argue a film TV route. Don't get me wrong, definitely outliers, definitely those ones that you kind of go, oh, wow, this is puppetry. That's crazy. Or it's got a puppetry element to it. But, you know, I mean, can you guys think right now of films in the last 10 years that have come out with puppetry skills immediately in it? You know?
Yes.
Go for it. Prove me wrong.
I don't know whether I can talk specifically about it.
Then it doesn't count.
Because
then it doesn't count.
It's not out yet. But there was a job that I worked on, which was a big Hollywood studio.
Really?
And the characters in it were a combination of motion capture, mm-hmm. puppetry, nice. And VFX.
That's cool.
So they obviously got the motion capture for the realistic performances, but then in terms of having the characters move around a space, mm-hmm. and using the actual lighting, it was all puppetry.
Wow.
And then they had sort of models of those characters in that space,
yeah.
which they just used for, you know, the photography to get the VFX, to get the lighting on the textures and stuff.
That's really cool.
So that we on that job we hired specifically,
yeah.
actors with puppetry skills.
Yeah, for sure.
Now name a second one.
Well, I haven't worked on it, and the others aren't out yet either. Presumably,
NDA.
Yeah. So I mean, that's an interesting thing. Moving aside from puppetry,
yeah.
As an actor, there's something really into that.
Mm.
What's it like when the industry is so full of NDAs, which, you know, if you know, it's a non-disclosure agreement, and it obviously protects the companies that are making the projects. Mm. And for video games, it might be a 5-year process before sure. it's even out, etc. Sure. So as an actor, how do you handle, I presume you can't, but what's it like being under NDA for so many of the things that you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, terrifying on one hand, because you're very much like, am I saying something too much? Am I saying something that I'm not even at all allowed to mention? So that, you know, it does put you that kind of moment of going, what can I say? You know, but, you know, I mean, that's I'd argue leans heavily into reading your contracts and reading your NDAs and reading and understanding them, you know, before signing them, really kind of take a minute and go, okay, I know what I can, what I cannot. And if you can't, you know, clarifying, just asking the people involved, being like, look, just so I don't make a mistake, can I clarify, is this, are you comfortable with this? Is this okay? And, you know, unless you get someone who's really an ass, like, generally speaking, people are like more than happy to clarify because they don't want the hassle. Nobody wants to cause an issue, you know. But definitely as an actor, it's a bit terrifying. It's exciting as well because, you know something's coming. You know what's coming and you're kind of like, oh, I want to talk. I'm so excited. You get so excited about it, especially when like hint stuff starts coming out and little promo stuff starts coming out. You start getting that kind of, I told you.
That's when the wink comes out.
Yeah. Guys, I know. I'm tired. But it is, it's really exciting. It's really exciting and it's terrifying and it's interesting because it's predominantly common in larger scale work, in more work that's obviously got a higher commercial value. It's really interesting because obviously you start then looking at that comparatively to the rest of the industry, to what jobs, why they enforce it and why they don't and everything. And it's really, really, at least for myself, I find it very interesting on what point an NDA is required and at what point NDAs are something that they're putting out because genuinely, yes, absolutely, if you step out of line, you're going to cause a problem for these people. And when it's like, they're just covering their backs moment. But it's really interesting.
That is interesting. I mean, as a producer, I struggle to see a situation in which I wouldn't want one. Because from a cautious perspective, might as well have one than not have one.
Absolutely.
So it's interesting. I'm wondering whether it's just because they're like, whatever. Like, it doesn't matter.
Wouldn't be able to tell you. I mean, it's like I said, it's generally, I've only seen it in the higher financial return projects, projects that are looking to have a more global reach or are looking to have quite a high return on whatever the product or the show or the project is, whatever it is. So it's interesting, but like, absolutely, I see why it's a safeguard. I understand why it's needed. But yeah, the first time you get an NDA, your little actor, you're like, what do I do? You know, you're kind of freaking out, going, okay.
I think that there's this thing about NDAs in the industry, which is you, especially if you're starting out, don't be freaked out about it. If you are a professional, you wouldn't talk about the project anyway. So we work on various sets and stuff as well, not in acting capacity, but you're still as a crew member under confidentiality and NDA agreements. And you just don't talk about it. You just go, I'm working on this project in a place for a certain amount of time. And you don't necessarily need to tell people what that is. But we have it here at Centroid where, we go, people go, well, can you sign this NDA? And it's like, well, yeah, but we're not going to talk about it anyway. So like, yes, it makes them feel more comfortable, but we wouldn't in our right minds ever mention anything about a project to anyone else anyway. So but you still, I understand you still get the NDA if you want to as the project lead, but I just feel genuinely, if you are a professional working in the industry, you just don't tell people about stuff.
Especially if you're considering your career in the long term. You know, people who don't see their career in the long term, I can understand being a bit more kind of haphazard about procedure and stuff, but like when you're committed to going the distance with this stuff, there's a level of professionalism that you just kind of go, this is just something you just don't talk about, you know, and that's okay. That's fine. I'll talk to you about anything else and everything else. Just don't talk about the thing, you know.
Actors and spies. Can't tell you. So I mean, the reason I bring it up is I often have a lot of actors come in touch saying, can we show some stuff or show reels and things like that? So when you're starting out in the industry and you haven't got a massive backlog of work, perhaps because it hasn't come out yet, how do you go on to like promote yourself to your next potential project? You can say, obviously, that you're in something yet to be announced, but I presume it's quite difficult. So how would you advise that you kind of handle those situations?
I mean, again, obviously, depending on the terms of the NDA, you know, if you can mention people involved, because obviously sometimes you can't even mention people involved. But if you are, you know, to say like, oh, I've worked with, you know, people in Centroid, or I've worked with this particular director or that kind of thing, and these people have built, obviously, their careers almost entirely around video games and motion capture and that kind of stuff, it adds a level of credibility to the employment you've been given, because obviously it's you've worked with people that, you know, they can potentially reach out to and get a recommendation from. You know, it obviously creates a nice opportunity for you to kind of be like, you know, I've worked to this kind of a scale because this is the kind of work these companies, these directors work at. And it gives a good idea to future employment that you can either handle work of a certain caliber, but also you can potentially be trusted, you know, to work at a professional level and to a professional level that they expect, you know. So I think it's making sure that obviously you don't just, you know, throw names out. That's not okay. It's very much being like, you know, respectful. And, you know, and you know, mentioning things like, you know, saying I was a motion performance and voiceover artist, you know, so you're not breaking any NDAs, you're not causing any problems. All you're doing is stating these were the roles I took on, not the characters, but these were the roles I took on, so that people understand what comes with being a motion capture artist against a performance capture artist against a voiceover artist, actor combatant, so on and so forth, you know. So I think it's about, ironically, being creative with how you put the work you've done forward and who you've worked with forward. And obviously, again, I mean, depending on the relationship you have with the people you worked with, I mean, better safe than sorry, just reach out to them, drop them a message, say, look, are you comfortable with me putting you in this? If you're not, that's fine, but just let me know. Don't get me wrong. You know, I'm always wary about giving that kind of advice because I'm like, there's a difference between reaching out and harassing someone. And that becomes the problem that happens afterwards, is people go, no, I reached out, but I got nothing back. Okay, then you don't do it. No, but I want to. That doesn't matter. If you reached out, you got nothing back. It might not be malicious. It might just be absent-mindedness, they're busy, whatever. But don't then go on to harassing people. Don't go on to then chasing them down, hunting them down on social media, hunting them down and all this kind of stuff. You know, take your time, breathe. And then if in a few months' time, you need to reach out again, give it a try. Maybe they're less busy, that kind of thing.
I would say, from a producer's perspective,
yeah,
if your NDA allows, put the job on Spotlight. Because other companies will do it differently, but we all look through Spotlight looking for a performer for a particular role, or shortlist them for the client. And if I see they haven't really done much, I'll go, okay, they're probably not capable for this role. And if you have done stuff, but you're not listing it because you're worried about NDAs, you're losing out.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you can, follow Christian's advice and put at least that you did something and you just can't announce what it is.
Yeah, I mean, literally stating, you know, unannounced game or pending release game. You know, if you can put the production house that you worked with, great. You know, put it in. If you can't, that's okay. Just leave it blank at the moment.
Or the director's name is a good one. Because especially, I imagine, in theatre, definitely in performance capture as well, there'll be certain directors that we work with a lot.
Yeah.
And we go, totally. Oh, we know that director.
Yeah.
And it might be that we could just message them and say, so this performer, they're great. Exactly. Oh, yeah, they're really good, work really hard all the time, you know.
Absolutely.
And then we're like, great, we can put them on the list. Because for what I'm looking for as a producer is, I want to be able to put forward someone I know will be able to do a good job.
Yeah, for sure.
Because Centroid doesn't usually make the final creative decision because we're a service provider.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I don't want to be putting people forward because who we're putting forward a certain level of credibility behind our recommendations.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm going to be very cautious as to who I put forward.
Yeah.
So I need to know that they have a minimum standard of what they can do.
I suppose it's when, like, they don't have the credits to carry that. Mm. It's making sure you've got marketing materials that demonstrate that you can do it.
Yeah, because if it says highly skilled motion capture, I'll go, cool, where's the clips?
Yeah, where's the movement reel?
If you're not
stuff in the volume, where's your movement reel? Yeah. Where's your creature reel? Where's all this kind of stuff? Let me see some stuff, you know?
Yeah.
What is a creature reel?
So like different like physical form bodies of different creatures, you know, because obviously video games span, I mean, a multitude of genres and that kind of stuff. And it's also, in my opinion, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like it's really good for stuff that's like animated film work as well, that is required through motion capture. So it's like creating, okay, so is this more of a creature that has weight? You know, if you can demonstrate like weight is a big thing that I believe, at least as far as motion and performance capture goes, that a lot of people overlook. You know, if you've got to sell muscle tension and weight and the size of a character, that's going to affect how you walk, that's going to affect how you breathe, you know, and demonstrating that you can embody creature bodies that bear different weights, different skeletal structures. If you can work on stilts, if you work on, you know, arm extensions, all these kinds of things, they really benefit and show as much as possible. Even if you haven't got a credit, it gives you an opportunity to show as much as possible to what you can physically do. And this is saying, you know, not everyone who does motion performance capture is doing a human. Sometimes yep. you're needed time and time again for, you know, okay, this week you're doing this creature, but this next week you're doing a completely different body structure with a completely different movement and weight. Mm. And it's important to be able to see that versatility.
The classic example is the modern Planet of the Apes
yeah.
films, where you have actual actors performing as the apes. So yep. you need to be able to, usually they have stilts on their yeah. arms and they move like yeah. An ape would. So that would be a creature performance.
Makes sense. Why do you think, you said you felt that weight is something that's usually neglected. Why do you think that is?
I mean, with specifics to motion performance capture, like, you know, you're in a big empty space. Essentially, at its core, you are in a big empty space. You might have interactables that you can, you know, build some kind of environment around. But I think generally people who are new to it, people who are just getting started in it, start thinking more about, okay, how does the character, you know, how do I get the sound of the character? How do I get, you know, how do I perform this character? And sometimes you're just walking, you know? But if you're doing this big, massive character and you're thinking to yourself, well, I'm up, strong, chest out and this kind of character, but then you're taking light, dainty steps, it's, you know, it's, don't get me wrong, I mean, nobody gets it right first time, and even when you think you're doing it right, you're going to get someone to go, yeah, let's go again, just try it again, because that's normal, that's any of the process. But I do think weight is a big thing. Breath, I think, is a big thing. I think breath carries the same in weight, you know. I think it's just overlooked. I think it's something people don't think about when it comes to building a character.
There's a thing in performance capture, which is because you're getting it exact, it doesn't lie. So what you try and do is replicate weight of items, but also body, like you say. But like we have prop guns or weapons, and they're not like plastic flimsy things. They weigh the same as a shotgun. So because then your body tension and the way you hold it will match how you would if you were holding an actual shotgun.
Just matches.
So it 100% applies to your gait, to your walk and stuff. Is you've got to actually, your body can't lie. So it's why saying you're highly skilled motion capture, it is a highly skilled thing. It's not that you put on a suit once.
No.
It's that you are able to tell the weight and movement of your body as well as your lines, your voice. And that's why it differs slightly from film, TV and theatre. And it's a separate thing.
Yeah,
makes sense.
It's interesting because, you know, it can apply to, you know, how does your weight move in an unstable floor environment as well? So suddenly you're thinking about how does balance work with a body, you know, whilst carrying a very heavy book or something like this. You know, it's crazy. And I do think anyone who's done it several times or done it like a project over several shoots definitely suddenly goes, oh, okay, I need to think about this. But I think for people who are interested in auditioning for motion capture and performance capture roles, I think if I can give any advice for an audition, think about your breath, think about your weight, like think about how you navigate things that you're interacting with, size, you know, that's a big thing. You know, how many times do people pick up something, put it down, go to pick it up and it's a different size? You know, it's all these kind of things. And you're like, I mean, you know, you get, if you're lucky to have an interactable, fantastic. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you just gotta go, goes from here to here, and I go, every time it's gonna be here to here, you know, it's gonna be this moment. So it's definitely something I think anyone auditioning for emotional performance coaches think of is weight.
I think that's excellent advice. I'm curious if you have equivalent advice for, say, theater performances.
Yeah, so I mean, this is gonna sound the most artisty thing I'm ever gonna say. I kind of break this down, like when it comes to motion, body, think weight, think the physicality of that kind of stuff. When it comes to theater, think soul. Like think about selling emotion that isn't false. Think about where does this come internally? Where is the internal conflict and how is that expressed externally? You know, I think when people go for theater, you know, it's, I think a lot of the time it goes to, where's my audience? You know, where, make sure I haven't got my back turned to them. Where am I facing them? Am I open? Am I exposing? Look at me, like this kind of moment. And I think it's that kind of like, you know, you almost should forget your audience is there. You know, monologue, scene, whatever it is, forget the audience is there. And the more in that moment and giving of your soul you can be to whatever the character is, whether it's a character in pain, a character who's overjoyed, you know, whatever it may be, I think the more you give to that moment and focus on the moment rather than how does this look, will vastly pull people in more with theatre. Because yes, I mean, there's always the technical elements. I don't want to look at a back the whole time I watch a show, you know. But these are inherent skills that you learn that are natural skills to learn. But because they're natural skills, they shouldn't be things that you're obsessing over, worrying about. It's fine to turn your back to an audience. People turn their backs, and guys, you know. But if you're going to spend, you know, an hour show with your back to me, there better be a reason, because otherwise...
Really cheap seat.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. It's a really bad ticket. But it's... I think it's being in a moment with your soul in that aspect. I think it's putting the internal out, and not really don't get in your head, don't get in your body yet. I think get into who this character is, who this emotion is, what's the scenario, what's the feeling, and the more you can feel a moment, the better a response. And whether that, and that applies to, you know, because I know that naturally sounds like it leans to a dramatic moment or a sad moment, but that can lean to any moment, you know, comedy, slapstick, you know, just whatever.
I could have the actor wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was Michael Caine. And he was talking about when he first became an actor, and the scene was drunk guy coming home
you with know, the chair. Is this the chair with the door? I'm jumping to conclusions twice. Eddie Redmayne and now Michael Caine.
No.
I'm sorry, carry on.
And so he comes in and he's doing it and he's trying to act drunk. And the director stops him and he's like, you're doing it wrong. Like, you're a sober person trying to act drunk, whereas a drunk person coming home late after being out would be trying to act sober.
Yeah.
So you need to play it that way. And it's the same thing, I think this is Bryan Cranston, where he talks about, like, if a character cries easily, then we as the audience don't cry. But when they're trying to hold it in the last moment and then it breaks out, which is what you do when you're trying to hold back tears, you're not trying to let them come, you're trying to keep
it
in.
Stop, yeah.
And so that was interesting when you talk about making the internal external, but taking it on that journey. So just sparked that idea.
Yeah, I think the chair thing, it was a thing of someone for life I can't remember, but I think it was like a scene had occurred and a chair had blocked a doorway, and this actor tries to open the door and can't, and the director's like, right, stop, why aren't you going through that door? He's like, chair's blocking me. He was like, if there's a chair in the way, it either becomes a dramatic moment and you slam that door open, or it becomes a comedic moment and you fall over that chair. Find a reason to get past that chair, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's that not allowing, you know, the real world to come into it. If your reality and being in that scene and being in that moment and having your internal expose out, if there is the chair, the proverbial chair in the way, you find a way to either kick it out the way,
yeah,
or laugh about it, you know?
Yeah. I think that's a great shout. Like, there are so many great takes where the actor has injured themselves doing it and has used it to enhance performance. Like, the one that comes to mind is DiCaprio when he slams the table in Django Unchained and he cuts his hand open.
Yeah.
And he just goes with it as if it's...
Yeah. It is. I mean, the one that immediately jumps to my head is the Lord of the Rings, Aragorn breaking his foot scene. You know, we love that moment because that's shout.
Yeah.
Comes so real.
Yeah.
But no, I love that one from Django as well.
Well, another Lord of the Rings one when Lutz accidentally throws the knife at it and Viggo Mortensen is literally just batting a knife aside. And
you're, I'd say, thank God. Like, I think this is right. Don't like, misquote me here, but like, I think he was like adamant to train with a steel sword throughout Lord of the Rings, and he wouldn't have like a prop version. Thank God he did. I'll tell you what. That's really fun. Yeah.
I was wondering if we could go back to the early start of your career. So yeah. you started out in kickboxing, and then you chose to go to drama school.
Yeah.
And then you said you've been working consistently since. So what was that first role out of drama school, and how did it come about?
So I did a 6-month UK European tour. I did all of England. Yeah, England, Scotland, and Wales. I didn't get to go to Northern Ireland, but it was like mainland UK. And then we went out to the Netherlands for a while, which was a lot of fun. But that was a crazy tour. That was you know, first job. I was in my final year of training, and the audition had come out. You know, it was at that point where we're not doing skills classes, we're not doing acting classes, we're just kind of doing show prep and industry prep. That's all it was. And I was using every bit of downtime I had to get on emailing casting directors, agents, applying for jobs, you know, Spotlight, Mandy, other, whatever casting site I could get through. And this job came up, and I just went for it. Several other people in my class went for it. You know, it required sword fighting skills. It required, you know, someone in, you know, fit me very well. And I went to the audition, did a whole fight call, did an audition. They actually got very tricky in this first one. I only found out when I actually got the job. They planted people outside the room to basically see who was kind of slagging off who, and who kind of turned up and was like helpful.
Personality.
Yeah. Like really, like they planted like members of their own company and like previous actors who were already on the job in the waiting area to basically see who was slamming who was, you know.
You said it was a 6-month tour. So yeah. I imagine, yeah, if you're going to spend that long on a job with someone, that's not a bad idea.
But this is, but that, you know, that's one of those things that they don't teach you in drama school is, don't be a dick, you know? And how many jobs do you lose just from being an asshole?
Yeah.
You know?
Particularly in a game where you don't know who's friends with who, sure. Who's brothers with who, who's like I know plenty of stories where people are like, yeah, that person's great, but they were rude to, you know, my girlfriend or my wife or my sister or friend or whoever it is. And they're like, and so it will be going to someone else who's as good. And then, you'd have to be exceptional to overcome that. So not being a dick, very good career strategy.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, the thing is, like, obviously it's a highly competitive industry. It's an oversaturated industry, and it's, you know, a lot of it's born out of insecurity of, am I going to achieve this role based on my own skills and ability, you know? And I find that's when people start turning on other potential auditionees and other people. It's when there's that doubt that, you know, can I deliver? Can I deliver through my own skill? Do I have that faith in my own abilities and skill to deliver the best performance I can? I find that's the point where people start going, oh yeah, well, you know, and they start taking shots and that kind of stuff. But no, rise above it, guys. Like, you know, be you, not who you think they want you to be. You know,
100%.
Don't worry about, you know, you're there to deliver you and the best version of you, you know. And I think that's one of the bigger pieces of advice that you give out is going, like, look, they're not interested in, no, they're interested in you as a person, they're interested in you as an actor.
They want to enjoy working with you.
Yeah, exactly. But the job isn't to sell you. The job is to show the transition from you to character and how your version of this character is going to benefit this project. And it's not until after they've gone, okay, I think that character can benefit this project. Now, how are you as an actor and as a person going to benefit this project?
And I think obviously speaking as an outsider with acting, you also have got things like brand and name recognition that come into it in a way that, say, for producing or for location managing, it doesn't, because it's like, oh, I'll hire a good location manager with a good team and so on. Whereas you as an actor might absolutely kill it in an audition.
Yeah.
But if you have a more high profile actor who's maybe not as right for the part, but will draw funding, sell tickets and so on. And so, you know, you might not get a role, but that doesn't mean that your performance wasn't great.
No. And I think that's a big thing that obviously a lot of actors fail to think about is when you go into an audition, casting directors are writing notes about you. They're keeping pages of you and what you did, especially if you get into later auditions, you know, we're calling, doing recalls and things, you know, what you're, what you've got might not be right for that project, but the next time another project comes up and your name comes up, they go, hey, I've got this laundry list of stuff that you did that really made me go, wow.
Yeah.
And I want to push you for that job, at that next job. You know, I want to work with you again because you're putting a good front forward, because you're being who you are and you're a good person as well.
I think in this industry, you can't take things personally. Well, I had this performer reach out to me when she wasn't successful for a role. And she said, is there anything else I could do in terms of training to further benefit me getting that role? And I was like, no, I genuinely, you were fantastic. Yeah. You were as good as the other candidates.
Yeah.
The one they went for, they'd worked with before.
Yeah.
And I couldn't say that to her, and she might work it out from this, but you know, I'm not going to confirm all that. But I was like, it was heartbreaking for me because I was like, she's actually a really good performer.
Yeah.
Has a fantastic showreel. Yeah, There's no notes. I can give no notes at all. She just hadn't worked with them, the performance, for. So she was an unknown quantity. That was it.
But I mean, this is the thing, and this is the one that's always the, you know, when it comes to the coaching side of things I do, this is the big one that everyone's afraid of. How do I network?
Mm-hmm.
How do I create those opportunities with those people where they think of me, where when it comes to a role between me and this person who are equally as good as each other, but they've worked previously with this person, or they have a good relationship with this person, how do I make it so I also have a good relationship with them and make that decision harder for them to kind of go, who is it? You know? But it's a thing. You know, networking is such an overlooked thing. I mean, people understand the importance of it, but the application of it, that's overlooked.
And how do you break it down when people ask you for advice?
So, I mean, the first thing I do is I always, you know, ask them, why are you asking me that question? And that's one of my biggest ones for advice is when someone says to me, so, I mean, like, what kind of question, just like, you know, like how do I network? Something like that. So if someone says to me, how do I network? I go, why do you feel your network isn't working for you? And they go, oh, because I, you know, I'm not getting the jobs I want. I'm getting the roles I want. I'm not, you know, being seen by the people I want. And I go, okay, so you've identified three things there, of how you can improve your networking. You want to connect with people, you want to connect with bigger jobs, and you want to push your career. So now let's look at those moments individually. Connecting with people, are you going to industry moments where those people are present? Case in point, workshops, you know? Are you putting yourself in positions where research and developments are coming out? Or are you going to, you know, conversations? Are you sending emails out to them about what work you're doing? You know? And again, I reiterate, not harassing, because that's the other part that then massively damages you. Because, you know, you'll say to someone, are you putting out to people like casting directors and these kind of people, producers and such, you know, with, you know, your material? And they go, yeah, no, I sent them, you know, an email this week. And then about 2 weeks later, I sent it again. I'm like, okay, your average casting director, producer, anyone who's in, you know, that kind of a role, I mean, you know, they're getting thousands of emails. Thousands. And that's not an exaggeration. You know, some people go down and the bottom end, they're going down to, okay, hundreds of emails, you know, which is still absurd. So your average time is, you know, like 4 to 6 weeks before they're even seeing that email, unless they are hot on their emails.
We tend to look at these emails when we have a specific project come up.
Yeah.
we basically will be casting for a particular thing,
yeah.
and then I'll start looking through these emails and go, okay, who's reached out? Okay, that person, they have the right skill set. Mm-hmm. Let me reach out to them, see if they're available, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so you can get in touch, and I will be in touch when something comes up.
Yeah.
Because like in a lot of things, it's all about timing. Mm-hmm. So you could drop that email and they go, oh, actually, there is something Christian would be perfect for. Boom, yeah. you've got yourself a job.
Yeah.
Or you'll send the email and I'll be like, great, I'm not casting anything.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just keep that there.
Yeah, for sure.
And if you've been great in the past, then obviously when something comes up, I'll think of you.
Yeah.
But I won't immediately offer you a job. So the outcome that you're getting from that email will either be, yes, you've just landed yourself a job by accident because the timing was perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you're there ready for when an opportunity comes up.
Yeah, yeah.
And there is a value to sending emails when you're between projects, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, whatever it is, because over a period of, say, years, you can be updating someone who's like, well, I've seen your name a lot and you've done that and you did that and you did that. And it's people think of it in terms of, did I take action? Did I immediately get a job? Whereas this game is all about relationships.
Yeah.
And it's doing those emails of 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, whatever it is. And I'd really recommend working out who you want to connect with and basically cycling through.
Yeah.
Because that's a way that you can be constantly communicating, but not
irritating people.
Not irritating people, exactly. And it's one where you get so many jobs where it's the contact person, they haven't got it, but they've seen you and you've in a non-harassy way message them and they're like, oh, so-and-so that I know is looking for someone, I'll connect you.
Exactly.
And even if you don't get a response, doesn't mean it wasn't a valuable email and the person was like, cool, seen your experience, seen your name, don't have anything, bye. But then you've laid a brick.
Yeah.
Like and follow Centroid socials.
Oh, for sure.
Because if you like something on there, I will be like, oh, that actor, just thought of them. And it doesn't bother me because I won't necessarily, I don't get ping every single person who, you know.
Yeah.
Just a little thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But this is the thing, like, you know, it's, you know, we're talking about like that networking thing, building it. Absolutely. A cycled list of people that you're happy to reach out to. You know, where you're sending, okay, this is my time to send this person an email because I haven't reached out to them in about a month, 6 months. But equally, you know, when you are reaching out, make sure you're reaching out with something to say. And I think that's the other thing that a lot of actors find hard with networking is they go, I haven't got anything to say. I haven't got anything new to say. And I go, okay, so then my question then goes is it right for you to reaching out right now?
Yeah.
Is it right for you to be reaching out right now? And they're like, yeah, but I'm not getting anywhere. Are you sure? Because if you don't have something to reach out about, is there a greater issue? Are you not putting in time into your training? Are you not putting time into other skills that could benefit? Are you not putting time into your brand, your marketing materials?
And do the research, because like it says, you can comment on Centroid socials, or, you know, if it's a director or a casting agent or something, and you see they worked on a film or something, and you see industry press, you know, there are so many ways now. It's like the irony of like, you know, it used to be you just could call people, and then we've got phones and you could text people, and now it's like WhatsApp, Messenger, Instagram, like just
today TikTok really takes off in our industry. Like, that moment where Tom's getting all those TikTok videos.
I'm like, oh, that one's quite funny.
And the latest trending song.
Yeah. And particularly for actors, like, you've got good presentation skills, you would hope. Otherwise, you may struggle in acting.
Yeah.
Like,
but that's exactly the moment I'm talking about there. Sorry to cut you off there, but like,
no,
that's exactly the moment I'm talking about there, you know? So you're reaching out and you're not getting a positive response. Okay, so that's the point to look back and go, how is my brand looking?
Yeah.
What, you know, is my presentational skills working? Is what I'm putting out working? And if it isn't, I think, you know, the fear of, oh, but I can't do anything else. I can't do anything different. I'm like, no, guys, this, you need to be fluid. You need to be constantly changing and trying new things and stuff that you are not necessarily great at.
Mm.
And learning and growing and developing. Because if you're reaching out and you've got a material, or you've got a style of email or something like that, and it is not getting a positive response, it's very easy to turn inward.
Mm.
And you shouldn't turn inward. You should go, okay, that's not working. How can I change or adapt or reinvigorate this to make it more enjoyable to respond to.
If you create that presence online,
yeah,
then we'll find you. Cool. We'll see it. And then, you know, you're just basically being the best version of yourself and the best communicator of what you do. And then people will find it. And obviously, yeah, you've got to do active things as well. Not just the But having that presence and building that brand as an actor.
It's personal branding is something that's so underrated.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like you know, I get it and I completely understand it. We love what we do. Mm. And you're very, very lucky and blessed to be able to say you do something you genuinely love. But just because you're blessed and lucky to be saying you do something you genuinely love does not mean you can treat it any different to any other business. You know, everything from a corner coffee shop to Google needs input, needs investment. And investment doesn't come in the form of finance all the time. It comes in the form of education, time, you know, personal development, skills, you know, diversify everything that you have to make the best possible personal brand you have.
Yeah.
And putting it out there, you know?
And you're absolutely right. And it's because from my experience with actors, there is a love of the craft, which often doesn't lean itself to thinking of themselves as a product.
Mm.
And it's like any company markets their product, and social media marketing is massive. And what's amazing about social media marketing, you can market for free. Like people are like, oh, I'm posting all these days on Instagram, I'm only getting 20 views. It's like, yeah, but you paid nothing to post on Instagram.
Legit.
Like,
guys, you literally have a platform that you can direct people to that shows you in the best possible light.
Yeah.
That shows your quality, your brand, your skill, your diversification. It shows
and
as much of a 3D version of you as possible.
And if you can do things like fight choreography, you know, and you can make it an educational thing of like, this is the different weapons and these are the challenges. And, and if you're creating content that creates value, people will watch it for that value. And then while they don't realize it, they're being marketed you.
Yeah. There's going to be so many how-to stage combat. I'm seeing it just not mass.
Like, stage combat. They're all posted to my.
Yes. Everything, centroid.
I was wondering whether we could explore a little bit about how it is. Just how it is. That's not a question, a phrase. What it's like to sustain a career as an actor.
Sure.
So that's the big picture bit.
Yeah, yeah.
So acting, especially when you're starting out, isn't regular work necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
If you're lucky, you might get a good stint, but not necessarily regular.
Yeah.
How can an actor practically, you know, make sure they pay their bills?
Sure. Yeah, so this one, I mean, there's physical things that I always advise with this stuff. And then there's personal things that are much harder to encourage because obviously everyone's an individual. Everyone is different in terms of how they approach situations, people, the world, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, by no means, you know, please don't for one second think that I'm perfect at this. I'm not even good at this. People do this job full time far better than me. I am learning, I am growing, I am developing, and I am absolutely blessed to have said that I have worked exclusively in the creative arts industry since leaving training. And I recognize that that is something to be proud of, and that is something that has value and has worth to support. But by no means think of that it's easy. Realistically, what I would say, the practical side of things. Okay, so let's argue, you know, let's step away from training, because training is its own thing. And so let's say you're working your 9 to 5, you're working standard job, 9 to 5. You've decided, okay, this is it. I'm ready. I want to start moving into this thing. Obviously, personal circumstances aside, my general rule of thumb is, first and foremost, you need a safety net financially. So in that 9 to 5, you know, sacrifices might have to be made. Hard choices might have to be made. You might not stay out there, you know, for that night out. You might miss that social event just in the immediate. And I think that's a big thing for people to be aware of, is like the immediate effect. It's so much more easier to digest than the long-term effect. So if you're holding back in this immediate time and going, okay, I'm going to build myself a, let's say, I would argue 3 months total outgoings with a cushion. That gives you 90 days on your average months, 90 days straight where you can go, cool, you know, I have everything else in place. I have my CV, Spotlight, I have my materials, I have all of this stuff. I'm literally at that point where I am ready to start. I have 90 days here where I know that my finances are covered. There is, you know, even, you know, and that's why that cushion's there. So even if something comes out, I have a cushion that's going to cover those surprise things, but I am covered for 90 days.
Mm.
And then this is where it becomes a personal thing. And I'm like, cool, you got 90 days. That's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Go put the work in, you know? And hard work and working hard is such a subjective thing. Mm. You know, what you're doing and considering hard work to the person who's also decided to take that step down the road, that's an average Wednesday. You know, that is their half day. And that doesn't necessarily mean workload. That doesn't mean doing tons of stuff. It means how you're doing it and where you're doing it and when you're doing it. You know,
it's basically being productive with your time as best that you can.
Yeah. Do you need to set
yourself a time scale. I've got the finances for this.
Yeah.
You work as productively as you can within that, knowing that the clock's already started.
Yeah.
Presumably if a day here or day there comes up, you top up.
Yeah.
But basically you get to that end of that 90 days and then you do whatever it is that you earn that money for.
Yeah.
Do that again.
Yeah.
Fill up the tank.
Yeah.
Go at it again and just keep going. And if you get a big job, that might pay for you to take 6 months off and then you've got a 6 month.
Yeah, well, I mean the thing with obviously that is like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I would never, because it's personal situations, I would never say put yourself at risk, put your family at risk, put anyone who depends on you at risk. But equally, you know, if you are holding on to a plan B, you are diverting energy away from your plan A.
Mm-hmm.
And I completely understand people who are like, I need that plan B. There are people who depend on me. I completely get that. And you work that to your best ability. And there are things where you go, okay, cool. You know, you're working this 9 to 5, but you don't go to bed until 10, 11, whatever. Could 3 hours of that time be committed to your career and your plan A? You know, or are you coming home and going, I'm exhausted?
I'm going to sound like one of those self-help videos, but it's like, did you need to watch 2 hours of the TV show, or can you put that in somewhere else?
Yeah.
And it's and maybe every other day watch some TV, but also fill it with useful time. Yeah.
One of the most helpful in this regard, and a thing that I think everyone could take the kick up the ass that it causes, is when you look on your phone and you see how many hours you've spent on various. You're like, I don't have any time, and you're like, well,
I do.
It happened to me recently, like I, because obviously, like, you know, London Underground's bad for data, none of that stuff really. And I had a phone game, you know, that I was like, okay, this plays fine. I can just sit on the tube and do this. About, I'd say, literally 3 weeks ago, I suddenly realized, I'm on level 360.
Well done. Congratulations.
Thank you. But I'm looking at this thing going, I'm on level 360. And an average tube trip from me, from where I live to where I usually need to work, is an hour.
So, both ways.
Yeah. But this is what I'm saying. I'm like, that's an hour of time that I can clearly be putting somewhere else. And I've managed to now change a habit where instead of going on a tube with a phone game, I take a book.
Great.
And like a business book. And I read something. You know, don't get me wrong, reading for pleasure, for relaxation, absolutely encourage that as well. But this is something, this is a business book. This is a, you know, investing book. This is something that I can use to develop and build my own brand as a pastime to help me whilst I'm traveling. That's wasted time.
Yeah, finding that time where you're not having to actually put in much extra effort.
How many people want to read more, but go, I don't have the time, or I'm so tired? Cool, you have an hour.
Yep. Mm.
On a tube.
And if you drive to work,
podcasts.
Drive to work, listen to podcasts, listen to audiobooks.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You can find us on all of the major podcast channels.
Yeah, but it's just like this is why
you can download YouTube.
But this is why like you guys doing this is incredible, because literally, like you're saying, you can stick this on in your car, and you know, here's an hour of work that you can listen to, get advice for, and take home with you when you're driving home, and go, cool, I'm motivated now to put my 3 hours in after my 9 to 5 to put in that time to my career, because I have taken time to actually push my plan A, you know?
Yeah.
Yep.
But, you know, rounding back to the comment of, you know, going to full time. Yeah. Like building that fund, absolutely something like that. Talking to people that it might affect, huge thing. You know, if you have a family,
bring them with you.
Yeah. Because the worst thing you can do is scare your partner. You know, there's a lot of people who, when you don't know the industry in its ins and outs, you take it on face value. It looks unstable. It looks scary. It's full of rejection. And it can really put pressure on you, the actor, when you don't need that. When you're already like, I'm worried. I'm kind of like, is this going to work? So getting people on side to go, look, I want to do this. Let's you and I have this conversation and make sure that you're on side. Because then when you're going home, if you have that support network of, you go home from your 9 to 5 and your partner or you know, friends or whoever you're with when you go home is there like, okay, you got 3 hours to do. Put in your 3 hours, you know?
Yeah, and absolutely.
You know, that's a huge benefit. Yeah. Huge benefit.
Because it's either wind at your back or it's weight that you're carrying.
Exactly. I mean, I refer to it as the creative community. You know, your creative community doesn't have to be creatives. It just needs to be people who are supporting your creative community. And I think people who invest in their creative community get investment back. People you give to your creative community and they will give back. Mm. And it can only support you, you know?
And as particularly what you say with your partners, for people who have partners that are outside the industry, it's like you find it, you know, scary and you don't know where your next job's coming, but you at least have some understanding of how the industry works. If they don't have that understanding, you just randomly earn money at times and randomly don't know others. And you are not able to give any kind of sense of like, is it this month? Is this month? So the more you can get people to see it, the more you're just reducing that uncertainty.
Yeah. I mean, clarity gives, you know, relaxation. The more understanding, the more educated you are on something, the more relaxed you will feel, the calmer you will feel about it. This is why I'm like, you should be reading, because, I'm blessed to have a good creative knowledge of this industry, you know, and I gained that in training, but I had to put my own time in to learn the business of acting, the business of this industry. And that's the side of this industry that is not taught at drama school, that is not handed out, but it's also a skill that you take and you find not in the industry all the time. You find parts of it in the industry, but you find it in other aspects. It's crazy.
One of the things I love most about reading or listening to podcasts or anything about the industry is even if you don't take in more than 40% of what was said or read, is that it can spark a thought. So I might be listening to something and I go, well, you know what, I haven't spoken to so-and-so recently. And then you reach out to them and suddenly then that could be the thing that led down to a job.
Literally.
So it's just being in the space mentally means that you're actively engaged in what you do in your practice, and then things can happen from that. Whereas, you know, 100% of zero is zero.
Yeah, exactly. But that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, we were talking about, you know, you build this nest egg of fund so you give yourself time, because time is ultimately the thing that will give you success or failure with this industry, because more than anything else, you should desire independence, because independence of your time is what's going to benefit your career. You know, I don't answer to anyone on my own schedule. I am completely in control of when I decide to work, when I decide to stop. And because I am in control of that moment, I know how much I need to put in. And because I know if I don't put it in, there's no one else to blame. I can't get angry at a boss. I can't get annoyed at someone else because I'm the one in control. Yeah. And that can be hugely scary for you to take that personal responsibility on. But I would argue if you are given that gift of time, you can achieve incredible things with motivation, you know?
It's been amazing having you on, and we are probably coming near to the end. Otherwise, we'd probably talk all week. I just wanted to ask this. What would you say with the personality traits of a actor that's well set for success in the industry?
I think resilience, 100%. You know, it's a hard industry. You need to be able to maintain focus. Focus is, you know, is one of those things. I think ambition. You know, it's why settle for average when you were born to be phenomenal, you know? Mm. So have ambition. And I love people. Like it's always this thing. People always roll their eyes and go, oh, when I say, I'm like, the 5-year plan. I love that. I love that. Have something that you are like, this is a genuinely achievable goal in 5 years. And then when you look at that and go, okay, what do I need to get that goal? Okay, I need this. How do I get that? I need this. How do I get that? And you build a path from your 5-year goal to where you are right now. And then you have at least, you have clarity. You have an idea of, that's where I've got to go. That's the direction. Don't get me wrong. You're not going to do this. You're going to circle and serpentine everywhere, you know?
Yeah. Success looks like the stock market going up and down. Like, so the trend might be positive, but it's very much this rather than...
Yeah. But like you can, if you can build yourself goals, you need to be goal orientated. Because if you can go, this is my goal, this is my 5-year, I can, honest to God, if I take a serious second and go, my situation right now in 5 years, if I have no worries, no problems, you know, go for your best case scenario and go, what if I had no problems, no concerns, what can I honest to God achieve in 5 years? You know?
So if you're like, I want a role with lions on the West End.
Yeah, great. So that's, I would...
So you need to go, okay, so how do I get enough experience that those casting people are going to look at me? Okay, so I need a role with lines on a local theatre company.
How do I get into that? I need to be connecting with this casting director who does that. How do I connect with that casting director? I need to be going to workshops. How do I find the workshops? Get on your computer. How do I get on my computer? I turn the freaking thing on, you know? And it sounds so simple, but it's literally like, even if there will be other things, you know, you'll suddenly go, oh, this person hasn't got a workshop. And I go, cool. But now you've created a situation where you are looking for a way to interact with them and looking for an opportunity or looking for someone who is also involved in the project. And they're running a workshop, you know, and you can find that. But yeah, I think ambition, goal orientation, focus, and a business mind. You must have a business mind about this. We are creatives. We are wonderfully creative people. And it's important that we maintain that love of creativity and that love of creative exploration.
Mm.
But you are a business. And no matter, you know, and don't get me wrong, I completely understand. People do not naturally have business mindsets all the time, you know, and that's, but you can buy business books. You can listen to business podcasts.
Are there any that you'd recommend?
Oh God. Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Fantastic. Brilliant business book.
Richard Kozaki.
That's what I'm saying. You know, it's amazing, amazing book. Fantastic. It gives you a real great idea of using money to make money. You know, these are things, and it's his personal stories of how he approaches risk. Fantastic. You know, I'm currently reading Think and Grow Rich, Napoleon Hill. Fantastic.
Classic.
Yeah. Fantastic book. You know, yes. Has questionable moments of people going like, is this debunked or not? There's value in there. There's value in there. Big left field one. Sun Tzu's The Art of War.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Guys, strategy. There is strategy in our industry. You must think about strategy. You know, this is a massive, amazing thing. Psychology of Money, you know, Morgan Housel. Fantastic book. A really amazing way to look at how you think about using your money. And obviously, this is all currently built around money moments. But that's where your creative brain comes in, because you look at this and go, he's talking about the stock market. But how does this technique, how does this thought process affect my business? Yeah. How can I apply this strategy from The Art of War to my business, you know?
Part of what made Charlie Munger, who recently passed, and Warren Buffett the most successful investors in terms of portfolio over history is they brought in things like evolutionary biology mm-hmm. and applied it to the stock market and companies. Mm-hmm. And like, what are the advantages that have enabled species to survive, and how can you apply it? And no one else had, particularly on scale, had brought that kind of thinking in. And
they do it with design and stuff as well, of like planes and various
things. Yeah. I'm absolutely bastardizing this quote, but it's a great one. I believe it's Warren Buffett, where he's like, you know, an idiot with a plan will do better than a genius without one.
You makes know, sense.
That's... having a plan.
So I have a quick question around agents.
Yeah.
Which we haven't really touched on and we probably won't have much time for, but are there then actors who aren't business minded, who basically get signed mm-hmm. and then just rely on the agent to do everything?
I'm certain there are.
And how do you see their success happening? Is it just that they just happen to get the right role at the right time, but it's not in their hands?
I mean, obviously this goes into nepotism. That's mm-hmm. that is a factor of our industry. You must mm-hmm. must think about nepotism. But then, you know, you also think about scale of agent. You know, if this is an incredibly active, well-connected agent, they are going to be able to run your business incredibly well and get you the jobs that you want, and you are potentially able to take a step back. But I would argue, why would you want to? Why would you ever trust the future of your career, your finances, yeah. your life to someone else? Because even the best agents and the most respected and well-connected agents are not going to give more energy than you can.
Yeah,
100%. And also because they have a lot of clients,
yeah.
so especially the big ones, that they might be like, They can only physically put forward people so much.
Exactly. And they have their money makers.
Yeah.
They have the names.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's great. And I'm you know, so proud of you if you manage to land an amazing agent. That is a wonderful thing and not something to be taken for granted. But equally, don't let the fact that you have someone with a name, have someone with a reputation, have someone with a connection stop you from putting your time into your business.
And you'll be amazed how much, if you invest in your personal brand, people like agents will consider you more of an investment worth backing.
Oh, yeah.
Because
oh.
And there's a quote I love, which is basically when you're starting out, and it does not just when you're new, it's at any level, the way you impress the people who are beyond you is with effort. Mm. Because effort is the currency of respect.
Yeah.
Because before you're good, you can't impress with quality, but you can impress with grind.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's crazy. And it really is... It is you know what you're saying about, like, you know, your personal brand. It really will help you stand out, and stand out is a big thing that actors are afraid of. Big thing actors are.
It's ironic, really.
It is, isn't it? But it is. It's you know, investing time in your business shows that you have faith in your brand, and the more faith you show that you have in your brand, your product, your service,
the more likely people buy. Yeah,
you know.
On that amazing note, I think we will have to draw this to a close. Obviously, you've given us incredible advice for all those aspiring actors. You do have a service, Coaching with Chris.
I do.
If people want to get in touch with you to talk further, if they want to really get in
for sure.
to your advice, how would they reach you?
So the best way to reach me is Instagram. So you can find me on coaching.with.chris. Or you can also follow my acting page, which is Christian_R3ID. Or if you want to get to... on your skills, your physical skills, stage combat, puppetry, all these kind of stuff, come check out Fleur de Lis. You know, we have Fleur de Lis, that's FLEURDELI_theatre. And, you know, we run workshops in stage combat, puppetry, physical theatre, classical theatre, voice, all of these skills that are highly employable and in demand and will help you bolster and diversify your personal brand, you know. So perfect. Please reach out.
Brilliant.
And we will put all that in the show notes.
Thanks.
Yeah. All right, pleasure. Thank you.
No, it's been fantastic, guys. Honestly, really appreciate it.
Bye.